One last mock draft before the NFL draft finally gets here. We're joined by Jacob Sanderson, talking rookies, ideal landing spots, trades we take instead of those rookie picks. We're going to talk all of that and take your questions as we go. Let's get into it. Jacob, it's draft week. Months of build-up. It's finally here. How hyped are you for it?
Oh, extremely. And you know what makes me even more hyped is for the last, 8 years, I guess, between undergrad and law school, the fantasy playoffs were always during December exams, and the draft was always during April exams. So, like, the two best times for fantasy football were always just the most, like, egregious times to be trying to do either content or even just, like, play. And now, finally, the draft is coming at just, like, a perfectly normal time in my life. So this is the best week of sports because it's the NFL draft. It's the first weekend of the NBA playoffs, and it's the first weekend of the NHL playoffs. So this is everything for me. I'm extremely excited and happy, and it's sunny outside.
Love that. Multi-sport stuff. We'll get into it all. Rich joined us, always, my co-host Rich. You've been busy getting version 2 of Rookie Guide kind of polished, close to being finished. What's the one thing you're so excited for in this first round of the draft coming up on Thursday?
Draft capital for these tier 2 wide receivers. That's, you know, we all know the big three are likely locked in for top 10 picks, but I'm fascinated to see. We know there's going to be some other wide receivers that go in round one. Who's it going to be? How high in the first round are they going to go? How many of them go in the first round? So yeah, I'm hyped for that Thursday night.
Yeah, absolutely. Busy week. Lots of tweets, lots of hot takes are all coming. But let's get into it. Superflex, tight end, premium, rookie draft. Jacob, I'm going to come to you for the 101. You know, all it right. Feels pretty obvious where most people are going at this point. But if it is Caleb Williams, how high of a return are you expecting in year one? How useful do you think he's going to be in redraft?
Yeah, it's going to be Caleb Williams, although you did say that there were trades in this. So if you want to offer me a trade, maybe I'd listen to that, but I'm certainly not going to pick any other player. I would say that I do think that the gap between Williams and the rest of this tier, from early drafts that I've done and early trades that I've seen, I would say it's wider in the market than it is for me. I did my write-up on the first round guys, our first round in rookie drafts a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I've been watching and aware of Caleb Williams, like all of us have, basically since his first start. And, you know, I've always been really, really impressed whenever I'm watching him play. I came away slightly underwhelmed in my statistical deep dive. I mean, he still has a really strong profile, up over 10 adjusted yards per attempt right away, coming in as a freshman and sustain that. But there's some issues to me with his pocket management. Had a really, really high pressure rate. And then more concerningly in PFF's charting, he had one of the highest rates of pressures that he was deemed responsible, with one of the lowest rates of pressures that his offensive line was deemed responsible for. His big time throw rate over the last year really receded, especially in the deep and intermediate areas of the field compared to the other top members of this class. So I think he is a strong profile, clearly QB1 to me, and he's going to be drafted in a great situation. But the ranking difference that I have between him and the next few guys is probably more like a late one. And in terms of what you can get for Caleb Williams in the veteran market, you know, some of these other round one startup picks, or in terms of how much you can potentially get on top of him for a Neighbors or a Harrison or one of your other favorite quarterbacks, I'm at least listening to offers when I'm at the 101. I've done a couple trades with the 101 already, but if I end up picking, I'm certainly happy to take Caleb Williams. I think he's going to be quite strong, and he's in a great situation.
You're on mute, Tom.
It feels like in previous years, there was quite a gulf at times between the 101. You know, I mean, even like last year, there was the point with kind of Bijan Robinson and stuff, and even Breece Hall, and where there was such a gulf early at the top of drafts where people were trying to get out of it at times because it felt like such a valuable pick. Whereas this year, it feels like people are trying to get out of that pick because it's so valuable. but also there's such a good amount of talent within the top six. Is there a certain range within that first round that you wouldn't be willing to trade past from the 101?
I mean, ultimately, it comes down to the total value of the package. But I would say the only scenario where I would be looking to move back behind the top five or six would be if my team is quite poor. Like if I, you know, tanked and not necessarily an intentional tank. Like if I tanked because my team just sucks and I ended up with one and I don't have much else, then sure. You know, I'd probably be pretty interested in getting really diversifying that asset and okay, give me the 108 and give me a 25-1 and give me a couple seconds and give me a 26, like that kind of package. But if I feel reasonably confident about the value of my team, then I don't want to waste this opportunity and this value on not getting another elite asset. So far I've traded Caleb Williams three times, once more or less straight up for Justin Jefferson. Once I probably added a little bit, but it was like a 3-for-3 trade into Jamar Chase. And then once it was a massive piece trade, but the bulk of it was him and a first in the future for Josh Allen. So that's kind of more where I'm looking. If I'm just looking to move down in the draft, I realistically do want Harrison or Neighbors. And I'd probably be trying to look and see if I could get a future first tacked onto that. But you know, it's going to depend on the rosters and the manager. I try to be as creative as I can with some of these trades to try to make it make sense for both sides.
Nice. If this is the first time you found us here at Fantasy Sanctuary, hit that subscribe button down below. We've got loads more rookie content, loads of draft content, best ball season. A week on Monday, it all kicks off. Me and Tyler will be live every Monday on Underdog. DraftKings show on Wednesdays. Hit the subscribe button, hit the like buttons. Rich at the 102, would you take this pick or in a super flex? Could I tempt you with Jordan Love straight up?
Oh yeah, give me Jordan Love straight up. I'd take Jordan Love over the 101 right now, which I think is probably a little bit of a hot take given how people are high on Caleb Williams. I'm a little bit lower than consensus in terms of value, and I've got Jordan Love as a top 10 asset in Superflex. So yeah, give me Jordan Love every day of the week here. But I love Jacob's points around trading back off the 101. I think for me, I've got those top four almost as a tier. So if I can move from 101 to 104 and get an asset on top, that's a move I'm making every day of the week. If I can get a first, that's an absolute smash. So, yeah, really excited by trading back off that 101. But give me Drake May here. I've said it all off season. It's 1A, 1B for me in this draft. I really believe in Drake May, and I think he's going to go two in the draft, get a great landing spot, and I really think he could be fantastic for fantasy.
Jacob, were you expecting that there? You hit us with the old wow. Like, are you seeing more Jaden Daniels or more Marvin Harrison in this spot?
Yeah, especially Marvin Harrison. So I've only done a few drafts so far. I've yet to see a second quarterback go before four. So that was, you know, a surprise for me, but I think that we'll see some volatility. I think that I'd be pretty shocked if Caleb doesn't go at one in 80%+ of my drafts. I do think once we get into the 2 to 7, range that we're going to see, you know, a lot of maneuvering. My advice would be to folks is I do think that the player that people will be most inclined to trade up for at the two is probably going to be Harrison more often. So if I'm picking there, especially if I'm picking there and I do need a quarterback, I would at least want to try and canvas and see if I can, you know, maneuver my way down the board one or two spots. The nice thing is with quarterback is it's usually pretty easy to tell, you know, if you're talking to someone, if they're moving up for a quarterback or not a quarterback, right? You can kind of look at their roster and figure that out. So if you're at the two and you like May or you like Daniels and you do need a quarterback, you know, I would look at the people who has two solid quarterbacks, see if they want to move up. If they do, it's probably for Harrison or Neighbors. And then maybe you're able to net something. And if not, you know, then I don't think it's a bad pick to go ahead and take him. I'm looking at my ranks right now. I have Harrison, Neighbors, and May all in the same tier. So in a vacuum, I certainly have no issue with it.
Nice. So if you were to pick here at the 103, could I tempt you with two random 25 firsts and the 201 in this year's draft? Or is that a deal that you could see yourself doing if you were kind of still in a rebuild stage, weren't ready to compete this year?
You know, in a certain situation, sure. It's hard for me to respond to that trade offer without knowing what my team looks like here. You know, my issue with the 25 first is that I really think quite poorly of that class. And I think that there's going to be a time in which, you know, maybe the larger dynasty market becomes aware of how poorly that class projects. And at that time, I'll probably want to buy into it. Like, we're often not very good at actually predicting what classes are good and bad. But it's this kind of weird setup where the 22 class was like this, in that I was trying to initially not overly invest in the 2022 class because I felt it was going to project poorly. And then once we actually got around to draft season, everyone was like, oh, this class isn't very good. Then I want to buy in, but I don't necessarily want to be left holding 25 ones that are viewed as normal ones when I think come next January and February, the market perception will be a little bit lower on those ones. So I'm going to decline that, but I do think, like, on balance, that's probably is a pretty fair offer. And there's certainly teams where I would take it. I will take Marvin Harrison though, in the 103.
How confident will you be in Marvin Harrison if he lands with the Patriots?
Well, first off, I would be quite stunned if that happened. I would give that like under a 5% chance of occurring. I think I'm about 80% on Patriots take a quarterback, and of the remainder of that 20, I think it's more likely that they trade down than that they stick and pick Marvin Harrison. But yeah, if it did happen, it would be a bummer. You know, I said I have Harrison and Neighbors in the same tier. If Neighbors goes to the Chargers or the Cardinals and Harrison was to go to the Patriots, I would probably have Neighbors ranked ahead. Ultimately, what this comes down to for me, Harrison, I think, is a slightly safer prospect because he has 2 years of truly elite production. Neighbors had a strong year two, but nowhere close to Harrison's year two. It was really the year three that was more even. But in Neighbors' corner is, you know, he's a year younger than Harrison, so I think you can excuse some of that slightly slower development curve. Also, a much more explosive yak receiver, 51 forced missed tackles in his career versus just 14 for Harrison. I think you could make an argument that the true upside of Neighbors might even be slightly higher, or that he has slightly more ways to win. So for me, it just comes down to who does the market prefer, and, you know, because I don't want to have a like 3x the market of one and zero of the other. And right now the market is preferring Harrison, so I have no reason not to go with them.
Nice. We are going to get to all the questions in the chat very shortly, but Rich, at the 104, I'll let you make a pick here.
Yeah, so I'll go Neighbors. I think, you know, Jacob talked about May, Harrison, Neighbors all being in the tier. It's exactly the same for me. I think Neighbors has got phenomenal potential. His ability with the ball in his hands is completely rare. And I think that he has, you know, overall dynasty wide receiver one potential in his range of outcomes. And to be getting that potential with the fourth pick in a rookie draft is absolutely wild.
Nice. Over to you, Jacob, at the 105. Do you like this pick, or is this the kind of range where I could tempt you with Drake London straight up for the 105?
Well, you know, it really, I was going to say this even before you offered this trade into the mix, but this is one where it would totally depend on my team, because to me, there's two guys here that I have in the same tier. And it really would just come down to what's my roster construction. If I feel the need for a quarterback, to me, it's clearly Jaden Daniels. If I feel the need for another position, it's clearly going to be the other guy. But you know, both of these are positions in which you only need one or two. So not knowing either of those and pondering Drake London, I'm pulling out my ranks, because if I had to guess, they're all in the same tier. Yeah, Drake London and the two guys I'm considering are all in the exact same tier here. So if I'm in a startup and these are the three options, London and two guys I'm contemplating here, I would take Drake London slightly ahead. So I would say yes to that offer in like 51% of circumstances without knowing anything else about my team. How's that?
That's a perfect answer. So is it Jaden Daniels at the 105? Would that be your selection if you weren't trading away?
It's not. It's not going to be my selection. I'm going to take Brock Bowers here.
Okay, nice. So Brock Bowers is a player that we kind of seen quite a range in his mock draft outcomes. Like early on in the sort of January when we first started doing these shows, he was going up in this kind of range, and then he's eased back a little bit over time towards that kind of 108, 109 range. And I think it's partly because he's been a victim of circumstance, because he hasn't done any testing. You know, he's been a non-entity in the news cycle apart from doing nothing. But are you very confident that he's just going to hit the ground running and be everything that we hoped Kyle Pitts could have been?
Yeah, I mean, so to be honest, actually, I have Daniels ranked slightly ahead of Bowers, even though they're in the same tier. And part of that's because I'm, you know, kind of constructing dynasty rankings with the market in mind, and I'm trying to do everything, you know, kind of in a position neutral. The way I build my teams, I'm generally pretty proactive at the quarterback position. So I would say more often than not, I'm taking Bowers here. If I do need a quarterback, it's definitely Daniels. I think for me, it's Daniels, Harrison, and Neighbors are, to me, total blue chip prospects. Really, I have no complaints about their profile whatsoever. What's so incredible with Brock Bowers, he has been top two in yards after the catch per reception among tight ends all three of his years. And he did that on an average ADOT above 8, which is remarkable when you consider, you know, all the gimmicky Mickey Mouse ways tight ends are used. And then you add that to his ability to consistently win on intermediate routes. He to me is a more prototypical tight end that succeeds in the way tight ends succeed than a Kyle Pitts. He's an effective run blocker, which is going to help him stay on the field on play action situations near the goal line. He's going to be an effective intermediate route runner, and he's going to be effective after the catch. That's really everything you want to look for from a fantasy tight end. And I'm very excited about him. With Daniels, we'll talk about the upside through the roof. I have concerns about the floor. I think he's a totally worthy pick at 105. I just am going with the blue chipper here without knowing anything else about my roster.
So one thing with Brock Bowers that kind of stands out to me, I don't watch college game in season, too busy with DFS, too busy with matchups and all that. But when you look at the stats, it's the end arounds, it's those jet sweeps and stuff. The record for a rookie tight end rushing yards was 96, set by Ozzie Newsome in 1978. Is Brock Bowers going to beat that this year?
You know, it's possible. It's pretty wild. Like, I don't necessarily expect the rushing stuff to translate to the NFL in terms of that, you know, he's actually going to be getting handoffs. But I do think when people make a big deal of the athleticism thing, like, that would be my first counter to it is, like, he played at Georgia, where the entire team is 4 stars and 5 stars, and they chose to hand the ball off to their tight end, right? So I think if you want to get at all concerned about athleticism, I don't think that Georgia makes it a habit of handing the ball off to non-athletes very frequently.
Oh, that's a great point. Let's hit on a couple of these questions in the chat quickly, and we'll get back to this. Rory, one of our YouTube members, you can hit the join button down below. Become a member, get access to Rich's Rookie Guide, load of dynasty tools, loads of best ball resources from 99 pence a month. He asks, at what point would you trade a random 25 first? The 109, the 1010, Jacob, is that kind of a range for you? Or is there a specific range where you'd be like willing to punt this year's first into next year?
It is. If anyone subscribes to my rankings, which are available through Thinking About Thinking, I do my overall rankings in tiers. And the way I do my tiers is with base value picks. So, you know, without getting into all the formula, essentially, I have like, okay, this tier is worth this in draft picks. And I have actually nobody ranked right now in my late first tier. I have players, you know, I have 8 players that are either a base first or above. I have nobody in my late first tier in a vacuum. And then I have a ton of guys in the early second and the mid second tier. So once I get to the 109, it's probably when I would be doing it if it was a truly random 25-1. Maybe that changes if we get a really, really plumb landing spot for somebody. But probably the 109 is when I start to lose confidence in the stability of the asset here.
Nice. Rich, any difference there?
No, given this is tight end premium, I'd say it's that top 9 that I'd feel comfortable with. So I'd trade the 110 for that future first. The only thing that would change that if on Thursday we see Michael Penix go in the top probably 20 picks with a path to starting as a rookie, I think he'd step into that top 10. I'd rather have Michael Penix as a first over a 25 first.
Go on, Jacob.
Well, I mean, I'm so out on the Michael Penix profile that it's hard for me to imagine him going in the first. Like, the way I've been trying to action that is I'm just betting on him not to go in the first, quite literally. But if I'm wrong about that and he does go in the first, yeah, I mean, that's going to be something to contemplate. Like, I mean, I would probably view him pretty similar to like a Kenny Pickett level of asset, in which I would really be holding him just because, I mean, I agree with what Rich said. Like, if he goes in the first round, he probably is worthy of the 109, but I probably just,
you wouldn't feel good about
that, so I can trade it. I just don't have any confidence in that profile at all.
Yeah, I don't love it, but I think that any rookie quarterback that's getting picked with a first round pick that's got a path to starting as a rookie has to be a probably top 10 pick in rookie draft. So yeah, I hold my nose. I feel pretty disgusting doing it, but I think Michael Penix has to be in that conversation.
We're on another question quickly and then get back to the draft. What would you guys be willing to pay to acquire Derrick Henry in this format? Go on, Rich.
I would pay, I'm just pulling up my ranks and values right now, I would pay an early second. I'm trying to think, I sold him today for the 111, but I'd probably pay 203, 202 if I was a contender that felt I needed that running back push to get me over top.
How about you, Jacob?
Well, you know, if you bring me on the show and I'm not very good at quick answers, I prefer to sort of lean into the theory of it. The quick answer is that I have him ranked in my mid two tier. So that's, I guess, the quick answer. But the more actionable one to me is whenever you're contemplating a move for someone like a Derrick Henry, it becomes how much of that value are you going to extract? So there's teams that shouldn't be trading for Derrick Henry, which, you know, it's obviously bad teams. But I think the one that gets overlooked sometimes is if you already actually have a really well-rounded out starting lineup, I would be focused more on extending your contention window and focused more on trying to establish more assets into youth and picks than just stacking on veteran after veteran to the point of diminishing returns. So my answer is more about when you should trade for Derrick Henry. And the when would be like, if you have an excess of picks and you have an excess of value, but you're short on production, Derrick Henry is a great way to pack a lot of near-term production into a very cheap asset. And I'd be willing to do that mid-second or even up to an early second in that scenario.
I think that's a great answer and a very interesting point that we could spend a lot more time talking about another day. But of the 106, let's get back to the draft. Rich, where are you going here?
Yeah, give me Jaden Daniels. I'm not the biggest believer in him. You know, I've done plenty of videos now talking about his potential, that my serious concerns, but the ceiling is massive. And I think at the 106, totally. It's worth, let's take a punt on pure upside.
Yep. Jacob, how do you feel about Jacob Daniels, like on a confidence level? If you had to rank it between 1 to 10, how, with 1 being he gets Anthony Richardson within the first couple of games, or 10 being that he turns into the next kind of Justin Fields, Lamar Jackson, dual threat who gives us league-winning seasons?
I mean, I feel somewhat similar about him to what I did about Anthony Richardson last year, which is just it's not a profile that I have a ton of confidence in, but I am very cognizant of the upside. And it's just a matter of, okay, at what point is the opportunity cost worth it? And I mean, I think you could make a reasonable argument for that as soon as the 102. I have him more in the 105, 106 range, but to me, that speaks to the strength of this class. My major issue with Daniels, I'll give an interesting nugget. You know, a lot of people talk about the pressure to stack stuff. I agree with that. A lot of people talk about the teammates. One nugget for me that makes me dubious of him: his incredible season last year, in which he led college football in effectively every efficiency metric imaginable, largely buoyed by his deep passing. He had a 45% big time throw rate on deep passes, which is totally bananas. Also totally unprecedented with the rest of his college career. The interesting thing is, if you look at his intermediate passing, out of 47 draft-eligible quarterbacks in 2024, he ranked 20th out of 47 in big-time throw rate, which is, like, bad. Like, for the most part, you know, when we're talking about 47 draft-eligible quarterbacks, 35 of these guys have no hope of ever being drafted. He ranked 35th in adjusted completion percentage, and yet he ranked first in yards per attempt on such throws. So if you're trying to look at and see, okay, how much of this offensive passing game success is him, how much of it is the receivers, I think that's when you start getting concerned, is when you start looking under the hood and some of the quarterback isolating metrics are less friendly than some of the output of the plays. All that being said, he's an incredibly electric rusher, and he has demonstrated the ability to produce efficient passing offense. So at the 106, to me, it's a no-brainer. You should be pumped to get Daniels with a lot of that risk baked in.
So where are you going at the 107?
Yeah, this is a pick that I think is also a no-brainer. He's the only player in his – he's like at a tier of one for me, really. And it's Roma Dunze, who I think, is an interesting profile. I think that he comes into the league at a good time for senior receivers in terms of his market perception, where we've seen a lot of them hit recently. And I think a lot of people are willing to now de-weight the declare status. I think that the gap between him and neighbors is appropriate. Even if some of the NFL teams don't necessarily see it that way. That being said, I do think that there's a lot to love. He's going to get incredible draft capital. All of the film community and his reception perception numbers are off the charts. And if you're looking for optimism in terms of his production profile, I would look to some of the research that Hayden Winks has done on how spread formations and number of receivers running routes per snap can affect yards per route run. Washington has a really high volume passing attack with a lot of receivers running routes. If you sort of adjust for some of that in your mind, that 2.93 yards per route run, given the quality of competition and just the way the offense functions, probably even a little bit more impressive than the raw number. I think Dunze is a really high ceiling and a strong pick here.
Any particular landing spot that you're hyped for Dunze?
Well, I think, any of these top receivers, the Chargers is the ideal scenario. I think that the Bears one would be the one that I would like the most from a me perspective, in the sense that I don't really want a Dunze on the Chargers because I would probably be uncomfortable with the price I would have to pay for his services there. But I'd also be very uncomfortable fading anyone on the Chargers. And I don't quite feel the same way about him with as much conviction as I do like Neighbors. Like if Neighbors goes to the Chargers, I don't really mind if his price balloons. Like I'll just pay up and do whatever I need to do to get it. With the Dunze, it's probably the Bears for me, because I think I'm willing to stomach some of the hit to his year one projection for some of that long-term upside. And I feel like I could get him at our landing spot that, if you zoom out, is quite favorable, but might be a more affordable price.
Nice. I like that. We've got Bendels in the chat saying, so close to BBM5 season. That's right. This time next week, BBM5, Best Ball Mania should be launched. Week on Monday, myself and Tyler, who's in the chat telling you to hit that like button, we will be live drafting on Best Ball Mania. 108, where are we going with this pick, Rich?
Let's go back to the quarterback. Well, give me JJ McCarthy. Look, it's super flex, potential top five pick. It's the values, phenomenal, getting a potential starting quarterback for three seasons, which is what we're at least expecting from a rookie that's getting picked that early. So, yeah, give me JJ McCarthy. Some serious question marks about the profile, but the NFL seems to fall in love with him. So, yeah, I'm happy.
Anywhere in particular you'd like JJ McCarthy to land, Rich?
If we can get him to the Vikings, I'll be a very happy man. I think whichever quarterback ends up on the Vikings, it's probably going to do great things for their value. I think if he goes to the Vikings in the top five, you're probably not getting him at 108 in rookie drafts. I think he's probably going to climb a lot higher. But whichever quarterback ends up on the Vikings is going to see a massive value spike, aren't they?
Absolutely. Jacob, if JJ McCarthy ends up the quarterback of the Vikings, would that be enough to bring Justin Jefferson back up to the 101 in redraft for you?
I think Justin Jefferson's worth the 101 in redraft anyway. But it would certainly make me take him there. Right now I don't feel like strongly enough to disagree from whatever the market wants to do. So yes, agreed.
Okay. So your pick here at the 109. Would you take James Cook for this pick? Say that you're on a team which is kind
immediate
of about
accept.
To contend.
Immediate accept. Immediate accept. Yeah, running to the podium.
Love it. And if you weren't to take James Cook in that hypothetical trade offer, who's the pick going to be here? We've got Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell, Troy Franklin, Michael Penix, all at the top of ADP.
Yeah, this is a brutal pick to be making before we know landing spots, because you know, like I mentioned, I have, let me just consult with the ranks here. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys all in the same tier. And these guys really, at the end of the day, are going to be separated from me by landing spot, not by not by talent evaluation. I think there's things to love or hate about each. But seeing as I'm forced to make a pick here, I think I'll go with Brian Thomas. He's, you know, the one that at the very least I feel the strongest about from a draft capital perspective. I think he's also the one I probably feel pretty good about the floor of what he can do, and that it's very easy to see how his game translates to the NFL. He's going to be an outside burner wide receiver. He's going to be a ball winner. My concern is he's never been able to emerge past a 19% targets per route run in college. Granted, he played his entire college career next to Malik Nabers, but still, you know, I think his skill set is defined and it's appealing and it's NFL valuable. I do wonder if it's limited in terms of fantasy, where if he's not on an offense with a quarterback who's willing to throw the ball into high risk scenarios, if he's not on an offense willing to drop back 40 times per game, then, you know, what are we left with? 18% target share on a 15 ADOT can be hit or miss. So don't feel great about being the one that has to kick off this tier, but that's going to be the one I go with.
Rich, I feel like you, knowing you, knowing your rookie guides, I feel like I know that you'd be fairly happy if this played out in your actual drafts. Would you be running up to the podium to make this pick at 110 here if it played out like this?
Yeah, I've said several times that 109, 110, I'm looking to trade back almost every time. I think the problem is that almost everybody's going to be looking to trade back. I'm not sure you're going to be getting any great value to move back to kind of 2-3 picks. But yeah, if I'm having to make this pick, smash Xavier Worthy, I'd have taken him ahead of Brian Thomas. I really believe in the age-adjusted production. I think there's concerns about, because he ran a quick 40, because of his size, I think that he's a good enough route runner. I think he runs a varied enough route tree that, yeah, he's never going to be a 1A in an offense, but I think he could be an electric 1B and command 20 to 25% target share and be a superstar fantasy.
Nice. Jacob, how do you feel about Xavier Worthy? Are you as high as Rich? Would he have been the next guy that you kind of would have lent towards?
Don't think I'm as high as Rich. He would have been the next guy I'm looking towards, but I wouldn't have been overly excited about it. I mean, the analytical profile is strong at like just a production level. I have a lot of concerns under the hood with him in terms of, you know, his efficiency as a downfield receiver has been quite poor. His contested catch rate is atrocious. You know, I think you have, if you're going to be a deep threat, I think it requires more than just being fast. You have to be a ball winner. And I don't think that he is, just stylistically. I have concerns that he's going to be pigeonholed into a role, which is like, let's get him 3 to 4 gadget touches per game for 6 yards each and then have him run clear outs. And, you know, if he lands with a coach that's smart and knows how to use him and has a plan for him, I'm going to be more excited. If he lands with a staff that I don't have a lot of confidence in, he just strikes me as a player who might be a bit confounding and kind of falls into one of the archetypes of players who have had stronger analytical profiles that don't necessarily always translate. So I have concerns with him, but I still had him the highest ranked of anyone remaining after I took Brian Thomas, and I have Brian Thomas literally one spot ahead of him. So
nice. Well, this feels like a good time to bring up this question from the chat from one of our YouTube members, Pat. What's the highest you could see a running back go in a rookie draft? And it definitely feels like it's not going to happen any earlier than this, but is this the range where you'd be looking towards him, Jacob? I know when it comes to best ball, you're a bit of a zero RB man like myself, but when it comes to dynasty and you've got these late first picks, are you against using him on running backs in this class?
I'm willing to wager that this time next week, a running back will be selected at the 109 in most rookie drafts. I think that everybody feels somewhat similarly about this tier of receivers, which is every one of them has some things to like, and every one of them has some things to be stressed about. And I think at the end of the day, one of these running backs, the issue of course doing this pre-draft is we don't know which one, but I think one of these running backs is going to get round two capital. They're going to get a really good spot, you know, ideally the Chargers or the Cowboys, and team, and people are going to look at it and say, Worthy, Thomas, McConkey, Mitchell, all these guys. I'll just take, you know, the Dallas Cowboys RB1 instead. And, you know, unfortunately, pre-draft at 109, I couldn't say, give me the Dallas Cowboys RB1. I actually have to pick a human being. But for now, I will start the running back run here. I will take Trey Benson, who is my RB1 by a nose over Jonathan Brooks. You know, when I say it's by a nose, I mean literally I will, whichever one of them gets the better landing spot and draft capital combination will be my RB1 this time next week. But I have to put someone there now. And for now, it's Benson. I give him the edge mostly because he's healthy to play week 1 and we don't know for sure what Brooks' status will be. I also think if there's any running back in this class that could be a massive, massive ceiling hit, and I don't know that that's likely for any of them, but I think it would be Benson. He's the running back that has the size-speed combination that's comparable to, frankly, fantasy superstars. His ability as an open field runner is really, really impressive to me. His tackle breaking metrics are quite impressive. It's a matter of vision and consistency and you know, not having been able to sustain a full workload in college, and all those are very valid concerns, and that's why he's a guy who might go at the 1-2 turn of rookie drafts and not like, you know, the Breece Halls and the Saquon Barkleys and the Jonathan Taylors that he has similar speed scores to. So I'll take Benson here. I think it's an upside swing.
Rich, how's that compared to your rankings of the top running backs?
Yeah, I mean, I've got Benson, Brooks, 1 and 2, same as Jacob. I've got Brooks over Benson, but it's literally neck and neck, I think. I just think Brooks potentially has got the higher upside and that sort of more transferable skill set, should we say, to the NFL. But to go back to the previous question about how early a running back goes, I agree with Jacob. I think that we're going to see at least the 109. If a running back goes day 2 to the Chargers or the Cowboys, I think they could potentially break the top 8. I'm not going to be drafting any running back in the top 12, but I think that you're going to see a lot of people with the thirst for running backs squeeze one into that sort of top 8 potentially. But with the 112, I'm going to go back to the wide receiver. Well, I'll go Troy Franklin. I've never seen anybody take such a hit for one combine drill as Troy Franklin has taken. I feel like he ran a bad gauntlet and everybody suddenly thinks that he's a terrible player. But yeah, I still believe in the talent. I don't think he's ever going to be a true, you know, 1A type receiver. But I think if you can line him up as a Z, get him to have that kind of deep root tree and not have to face a huge amount of press coverage, get him in some advantageous situations, I think he could be an absolute beast.
Good stuff. We're going to move on to round 2. But you are here 37 minutes into this video. Hit that like button, hit that subscribe button, leave us a comment, get your questions in. We will answer them as we go. We'll be live for about another 25 minutes. So moving on to the second round, Jacob, the 201, could I tempt you with Alvin Kamara straight up for this pick?
No, I think the Alvin Kamara situation is, I don't want to be the one caught holding the falling knife at the end of the day. You know, he's going to score I'm going to project him to score a lot of fantasy points until he doesn't, because as long as he keeps earning the target volume that he was earning last season, you know, you're locking him into 16 points per game. But the talent really has atrophied in recent years, and I don't want to bet on an asset to just keep kind of chugging along based on the choice of how he's deployed, which is how I feel about Kamara at this point. So there's still a few players that I like more from an upside perspective than Kamara.
So who can I give you of a 201 here?
Yeah, I'll you know, I had a tough choice my last pick between Benson and Brooks, and Rich was kind enough to leave me the other half of it. So I'll take Brooks here.
Okay. Have you got a particular landing spot you'd like for Brooks? Is it just outside of the Chargers and the Cowboys, which are the kind of the layup shots that everybody wants one of these top running backs to land to? Is there anywhere else that stands out for Brooks?
Yeah, I think, you know, those are obviously the best two, but if you're looking at specific to Brooks, you know, where could his skills be accentuated? I think the keys with him, I think he's probably, in my opinion, the best zone runner in this class. He has that kind of gliding style that if you watch him, I think it'll remind you a little bit of like an Aaron Jones. It'll remind you a little bit of a peak Tony Pollard. Just some of these guys are they're kind of gliding through diagonally. A lot of their tackle evasion comes on the basis of setting up defenders at proper angles more than raw power or speed. So I think in terms of a guy who's going to be able to navigate through a convoy, that's what you want out of Jonathan Brooks. And I also think the other key element for him is as a receiving back, you know, he falls into this group of backs where I think he is a fully competent receiver who is going to be able to stay on the field for all three downs in a way I'm not concerned about, but it's not necessarily a dynamic weapon in that capacity of the game. So you want him to be in a situation where a quarterback's going to be more inclined to be dumping down to the back. So I don't think that they're going to make it a point to get him running a bunch of wheel routes and a ton of screens and a ton of Texas routes and all that stuff. But if he's in a spot where a quarterback is already willing to just, you know, kind of drop back and check it down to the running back, Brooks is that type of back who's going to be able to be out there and going to be able to absorb those targets. So those are the key things. I think you want a pocket passer and ideally a zone scheme.
Nice. Rich, that kind of stack up with you, everything you're feeling on Brooks?
Yeah, I agree. I'm dreaming of the Cardinals just because I can see James Conner and allowing Brooks to almost be sat and used as a 1B this year and then unleashed fully last year. But I think it's a really interesting point about Jacob about the pocket passer rather than a mobile QB, just because, as you said, I think Brooks isn't going to be a guy that's going to be used heavily in the passing game. But I think where we probably could see him used more is in that screen game. I think potentially as a guy that you almost set up passes for, you're not asking him to have to run routes to create separation, but you get him in advantageous situations and let him feast in the open field.
Nice. And where are you going at the 202, Rich?
I'm going to Michael Penix. I'm still believing that he's going to be a first-round pick, and yeah, I'll grab him here.
Nice. Jacob, would you have let Michael Penix slip much further than this? I know, like, you mentioned earlier.
I would have let Michael Penix fall as long as he
wanted. Love it. Okay, so 203, where do you want to go with this pick, Jacob?
Yeah, I have two players left in my early two tier. So not an easy call here. And again, this is really a call that I think will be ultimately decided for me by landing spot and draft capital. But you know, I'm with two guys here from across the pond, so I'll take a nice young lad here. I'll take Ladd McConkey. For me, what I like about him, and I have him ranked, you know, really indistinguishably from Brian Thomas and Xavier Worthy, but what I like about him over both of those guys, he's the guy who I can paint a picture of how he becomes an actually consistent intermediate volume receiver. You know, Brian Thomas typically has been reduced to a pretty confined route tree, more as a deep threat. You know, Worthy has really succeeded as an after the catch receiver and as a deep threat option with his speed. McConkey's able to consistently put up strong targets per route run on strong efficiency, and he's able to back that up with, you know, film perceptions of him really being an intermediate route winner. So the question, of course, for him is, you know, why is the route volume so low? And it's hard, you know, to, even if there's excuses like injuries and game script, you know, we can't easily just translate what he's able to do on a per route basis to a full-time basis and assume that there's no drop off. If we could, he'd be my clear cut wide receiver 4 in the class. But I do think he has a high level of upside. So I'm going to take him here. I feel pretty strong about the value on this pick.
So in his best ball ADP at the minute, he's been going at pick 116, just ahead of Gabe Davis, around the kind of same range as Jerry Jeudy, Tyler Lockett. Have you been taking much of him, or would you have been drafting much of him if you'd been in the best ball streets?
I have been in the best ball streets, admittedly not as much. I tend to not go, you know, I probably should fire more at it, because I honestly probably have a better edge at the big board than I do at BBM with some of the dynasty stuff. I'm often so worn out post NFL season that, like, whatever energy I can bring up to do fantasy football is usually going into dynasty content, and usually the draft urge hits me right around when the big board is like 80% full, and then I fire 10-20 entries at it, and that's kind of what I did this year. But I took Ladd McConkey a ton. I'm often taking running backs in that range more than I am receivers, just with how I build my teams. But when I was looking at receiver, I thought he was one of the ones that was clearly undervalued. I just think he has a really refined game. I think he's going to step into an NFL team and succeed right away. You know, hopefully he finds an opportunity just based on where he gets drafted. You never know. But I'm excited about him. He's a guy that, like, if he lands in a spot where you can clearly see him just playing slot flanker from day one, that I think would be a justifiable pick up into the 8th, 9th round pretty easily for me.
Nice. Rich, where are you going at the 204?
So give me Keon Coleman. Basically everything I don't usually like in a wide receiver is Keon Coleman. I definitely have a type, and Keon Coleman's probably the antithesis for that. But yeah, I just think he's going to get draft capital. I think there's potential ceiling there, and we're now at the point in drafts where I'm chasing upside. So I'm happy to shoot for the moon and go and grab someone like Keon Coleman.
Any particular landing spot that comes to mind with Coleman?
I guess something like the Panthers would be nice. Somewhere where we're going to see significant target volume from day one and an inventive way to use him. Because I think if you're just going to line him up as an X and say, go and run me a full route tree and win me the ball, I think he's not got the route running ability to do that. So I think he's going to need to be able to almost have touches created for him and have separation created for him, because I don't think he's going to do it on his own.
Nice. Jacob, I'm going to throw one last hypothetical trade at you for this range of the draft. Before we get to the 205, would you take Michael Mayer, being that it's tight end premium, straight up for the 205?
That's an interesting one. I think I probably wouldn't, because there's one player left that I have in the tier above Michael Mayer. But had Rich just taken him, then I would have said yes. So you're very close there.
Oh, go on then. Hit us with who you're going for.
Yeah, I'm going to take a guy who I don't like at all, to be honest. But Rich clearly doesn't like him either, because he slid all the way to the 205, which I don't think is going to happen very commonly in real drafts. So I'll take Adonai Mitchell. His production profile is what it is. It's garbage. Is a career yards per route run under 1.7. His targets per route run has been consistently below 20. It's really a profile that's not that distinguishable from Keon Coleman. I think the difference is that the film consensus on Mitchell seems to be a little bit more optimistic in terms of his ability as a route runner and as a potential to play X wide receiver, while Coleman, I think, projects probably better as a big slot wide receiver. And then the other upside is just his draft capital projection looks to be solidly in the first round right now. So, is this a bet that I feel great about making at the 109 or the 110? It's not. But at the 205, you give me any first round wide receiver at the 205, and I feel as though I've absorbed most of the downside risk into the cost. So I'll take the stab here.
Yeah, well, we had Dwayne McFarland on a couple of weeks ago, and he called AD Mitchell the most overrated wide receiver in this class. So we've definitely heard some convincing arguments against him. But then you hear Adam Schefter go on the Established a Run podcast and say that he thinks that he could go nearer at 20, even to 32. Yep. And it feels like we're going to get some answers pretty quickly on what the NFL thinks of AD Mitchell this week. We'll rapid fire things up a little bit more, just a couple of sentences on each guy as we round out the second half of this round two rookie mock draft. Rich, where are you going at the 206?
I'll go Braylon Allen, crazy young, intriguing two down workload. Think he could be a solid, reliable RB2 for years to come.
Nice. Back to you, Jacob, at the 207. Would you Braylon Allen have been somebody you were looking to go with?
No. I would say Braylon Allen is if it's not Michael Penix, Braylon Allen is competing with him for my least favorite player in the class. He had, of every running back that I watched, which was the top, at this point, 11 running backs, I have him as my lowest rated on film. His analytical profile is obviously much better than that. I think quite clearly has the best age-adjusted production profile of all the running backs in the class. So where I land on him eventually will be somewhere in the middle of those two things. I have a lot of issues with this game. I don't think that he plays anywhere near the physicality of his frame. I think that he has pretty reasonable footwork for a big guy, but the upside of having reasonable footwork for a big guy as a qualifier is that you usually don't need to have as good a footwork because you're able to play with a lot of power. He plays with no power to his game, in my estimation. I think he runs high. I think he runs, frankly, soft. And so what you're left with is a guy who the strengths of his game are relative to his size, but I don't think are actually all that much of strengths in a vacuum. I also have, he had more volume in the passing game this year. I think that he still is not much of a route runner. And I think that his pass protection is some of the weakest in the class. So I don't see him getting on the field beyond the first two downs. And I'm just not sure that he's good enough at the thing that he should be good at as a 235 pound running back for me to see the use case in the NFL. So I'm pretty low on Braylon Allen. But I also understand that like it all the stuff could be way too into the weeds, right? If an NFL team just decides to look at him and say, hey, it's 20 years old, as an all around profile, he can handle the workload. Let's give him the workload. Like then he's going to score fantasy points. And, Shearer in this round, totally fine.
So where would you go at the 207?
Yeah, I will go with, I'll go with Ricky Pearsall here. This is another guy, maybe similar to Ladd McConkey, where the overall analytical profile is not great. Some of the per route stuff is a little bit more encouraging, and just my view of him as an archetype is what I really like. As a guy who can play slot flanker, which to me, you know, a player, to me, the most valuable and the most consistently fantasy-friendly role in any NFL offense that translates, I think, most from offense to offense is a player who has slot skills in three wide receiver sets, but can play flanker in two wide receiver sets. And that's what I really like about McConkey, and that's what I really like about Pearsall, is I think he's an easy stylistic fit into any offense. It's going to be able to have high route rates, but it's going to be able to play, you know, in the type of route role that he's going to have a high target volume per route in the NFL. So I really like that about Pearsall's game. I'm not going to pretend and try to put lipstick on a pig of a guy who wasn't able to make it beyond a 30% market share in 5 years of playing college football. It's not what we generally look for in analytical prospects. But at this point in the 207, you know, I'm going to take a shot on a guy who I like on film, who I like from an archetype perspective, and see what happens.
Nice. He's definitely somebody whose name seems to be coming up a lot more as we get closer to the draft. Rich, where are you going at the 208?
JT Sanders, given the tight end premium, the weight adjusted 40 concerns me a little bit, but you plug on the tape, I think he's a fantastic threat down the seam. I think he's a good nuanced route runner, and I think that he's going to be a player that a lot of NFL coaches will like, and he has that versatility to play in line and out wide and out of slot. So I think he's got significant upside, and at this point in the draft, given the premium, I feel like that upside is worth chasing.
Nice. Jacob, is JT Sanders your tight end too, or have you got another player ahead of him?
Yeah, he is for now, at least. I'm not especially in love with any of the tight ends after Bowers, but from a production profile perspective, I think it's clearly him. I don't know if we'll get to him in the mock draft today, but I will say that the guy I'd most like to get good draft capital is Jaheim Bell. I think he has an interesting profile as a sleeper too.
Nice. He's good fun to watch as well.
I'll go with the other quarterback, you know, and of these two, this is the one that I like more. He's the one that, I don't know who will get drafted higher between them, but he would be the one that if he did go in the first round, I'd be more excited about. And that's Bo Nix. I don't think he has a whole ton of upside necessarily, but I think like the Broncos just make sense to me. I think either in my last mock draft, I had the Broncos trading down from 12 and then taking him in the late first. I could also see them maybe even moving up into the late first if they do pick at 12, or I could see them just taking him in the second round with their pick there. I think it makes a lot of sense. He's a guy who avoids sacks. He's a guy who's accurate within the short and intermediate areas of the field. And if you're just looking at, if you're Sean Payton, right, and you're looking at your roster and you're just saying, I don't have a whole lot of assets to burn here, I don't think I can afford to try to move up and get a big playmaker at quarterback. I have cap constraints. If all you want is a young quarterback who's going to be cheap and is going to be able to facilitate the offense that you want to run, and you have confidence in yourself as a play caller, I think Nix can do that. So I think he's a guy who's going to be very system dependent, but I think he's a guy who can be a system quarterback. And I mean that honestly in a good way, as much as that's a derogatory term. I think he can be a point guard.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes people hear that phrase and immediately cast it as a bad thing. But when you talk about where you'd be taking Bo Nix in drafts, where he'd go in the real NFL draft, it's not as derogatory as when you're talking about a quarterback going inside the top 10. Rich, where are you going at the 210?
Give me Malachi Corley. I think there's some stupid and fairly ridiculous comps that are being thrown around that I think are completely unfair for him, but I think he's a really fun player. And I think that if he lands in a offense with an inventive offense coordinator that's going to use him in creative ways, I think he could be dynamite fantasy.
Nice. Jacob, is he somebody that you've been intrigued by through this process?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's fine. I think at this point in time with the receivers, right? I think it's kind of pick your poison. Like, there's a lot of receivers who have some interesting aspect to their game. And, you know, he's one of the more productive ones. So certainly no issues with Corley here.
Nice. And this is your last pick at the 211.
All right.
Feel like you want to go off the board a bit, or is there any player left near the top of ADP who stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just be honest, like, this is not the player I would actually pick here, but because it's the last pick of the episode, I just wanted to sort of shout out a guy that I like. So I'll pick Johnny Wilson here.
Oh, wow.
All Power 5 draft eligible players in the 2022 season, Johnny Wilson had the highest yards per route run among everyone in this class. It was even higher than Marvin Harrison. It's higher than Malik Nabers. His career yards per route run is, I believe, of the Power 5 prospects in this class, it's the third or the fourth highest. I'm not looking at my table right now. He was consistently out-targeting and out-gaining Keon Coleman on a per-route basis this year. And, you know, has been productive the whole way through Florida State. His athleticism at 6'7", 230 or whatever he is really quite impressive. Obviously a very unique and odd player, but I think buying into a combination of production plus athleticism and hoping that a coach can find a way to use it is interesting. Full disclosure, there's like five guys I have ranked above him in my rankings at this point, just from like a market perspective. But I don't know. I didn't want to be boring and take like Blake Corum. So I wanted to give a shout out to a player that I probably like a little bit more than the consensus.
I love it. Are you drafting him as a wide receiver or a tight end though?
That's what I was going to ask.
I mean, if he gets converted to tight end, then I would value him way higher, right? If he gets tight end position eligibility, then I'm like all in. I mean, that's part of the bonus. I think he can play wide receiver. I think he will be drafted as a wide receiver. But if you pick him in the third round and you even have a 10 to 20% chance that at some point he's going to get tight end eligibility, I mean, you're laughing, right? Like if we knew that he was getting tight end eligibility, he's obviously the tight end two in the class. Like, I think by leaps and bounds. So, I mean, to me, like, you took Sanders in the mid to late two, which I think is like an appropriate time to take Sanders. If we knew for sure Wilson was going to be a tight end, I would argue he should be like an early second round pick.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think if he becomes a tight end, I think his value shoots probably around in ADP, because I think he immediately becomes so much more valuable then.
Well, but let's not forget, the moment if he became a tight end, we'd suddenly have to change narrative and be like, well, rookie tight ends don't really perform. So, you know, we've got to be ready for that one if he comes out on draft night and is declared as a tight end. Rich, your last pick of this draft, your last pick of our entire pre-mock draft process that's dated all the way back to January. Who are you going with?
Look, I feel like we can go full circle and let's go Jalen Polk. I just enjoy watching him. I think I'm probably higher than consensus. I see there's some mock drafts recently that have stuck him into the back end of the first round. If that goes, I'll be incredibly happy. But this is a guy that I think can just consistently win. Probably not got the highest ceiling, but I think as a number two target in the NFL offense, he could be really useful as a kind of wide receiver three, wide receiver four for your fantasy team.
Nice. And if you want more of Rich's rookie analysis, 118 players written up, his rookie model, all of the rookie guide, it will be available imminently after the draft finishes. Rookie rankings, so much more from the mere price of £3. Hit the join button below. Check out the silver guide level. That will get you the access copy and so much more. Jacob, I know you've got content coming out next week. Your Substack is one which people absolutely should be subscribing to. You'll struggle to find a more thoughtful and thought-provoking Substack out there. Anything else that you've kind of got going on that you need to tell the people about?
Oh, that's probably the big one. You know, I'll have an article out within either the end of today or maybe tomorrow or Tuesday, but before the draft, I'll have the rest of my write-ups on the prospects app. And then, you know, right immediately after the draft, I'll have my post-draft rankings update. I'll have a draft kind of strategic guide once we have a bit of a handle on the ADP. And then into the summer, you know, we'll try and get some writing up about best ball tournaments as we sort of turn our attention from Dynasty. And then, every Tuesday, Dynasty Points. So this week we have John Hansen on. We're going to do a mock draft. our first and only pre-draft rookie mock draft of the cycle. So excited for that. And then I'll be around during the draft. I think I'll be on ship chasing briefly on Thursday night. We'll have a post-draft show on after each of the first 2 days on Dynasty Points. I'll be on Mike Zoltan's pod. And then Sunday, Dynasty Points, Saturday, we're doing day three of the draft live with me and Tom and Lucas and probably some guests popping in. So make sure to come check that out.
I mean, that just sounds like a fantastic week all round. You can catch my work on Fantasy Pros as usual. The Best Ball Show kicking off a week on Monday, two streams a week. Keep your eyes out for Rich's work with DLF. We will have lots of rookie content on the way back from the draft, including rankings. Make sure you hit like and subscribe. Let us know what you thought about the show in the comments, and we'll be back very soon.